check.
Check, check, check,
everybody. I'm thrilled to be up here with all my good buddies. This is going to be a lot of fun. If anyone doesn't like the banjo, you should not be here. Leave now. You've been given fair warning. Guards, escort them out, please. Well, let me just go down the line and introduce everyone, and we'll go from there. This gentleman right here is one of my big influences and big heroes to this day, Mr. Bill Keith over there. And my good buddy for many years, the president of Bluegrass for many years, with Hot Rise, a true gentleman. He invented the Niwot sound. We were together in country cooking for many years. Mr. Peter Warnick over here. Dr. And next to him, this young gentleman is making a name for himself in the banjo world. He's up and coming. You might have seen. That's right, he just turned 20 last week, I think. Need I say more, Mr. Bela Fleck over here. And the gentleman whose shorts I would love to get a pair of at some point. The shoes are happening too, absolutely. A fashion plate of this grouping up here today. And I first met Danny and the Bad Livers, and you can take that either way. And just an amazing, amazing musician on every level, clawhammer, bluegrass, singing, tune writing, everything. And Outre, whatever. And Outre. Mr. Danny Barnes. Well, as is often the custom with workshops like this, we'd like to have everyone introduce themselves in the audience first and stand up and tell you about yourself, and then we'll start from there. We're going to start with the Lonesome Road Blues and go down the line, and then we'll break down into smaller discussion groups, with your permission, of course. Yes, as Bela just suggested, could you please turn off your cell phones? I'll turn them on, never mind.
It's like my shellfish.
Phil, you want to kick this one off? Lonesome Road Blues?
Wow.
In the key of G? Thank you. Some questions. Danny, do you want to start off there with something?
Oh,
you've been chosen. Danny Byers, folks.
Anacortes, right? Washington State came a long way to be here. He need the bottom part of his pants on. Thank you.
some of what he's on. That was some really traditional bluegrass. Danny, what are you doing?
I don't know.
That was my version of a pistol.
Yeah. Any questions for Danny?
Hey, turn him off.
He's already up. No, let's take a few questions. Any questions?
Right here.
Over here.
Yes, sir.
Give us some
advice about how to get relaxation
in
your right hand when you're playing.
Relaxation in your right hand when you're playing. Keep the That's one way to go about it.
Is that a question for anyone in particular, or just a general question?
All you guys sound like pretty nice.
I don't know, that's a hard thing to answer. I know I started playing clawhammer a number of years ago, and I knew my hand was supposed to be relaxed, and I just couldn't get it to relax, and then suddenly one day it just did. So I don't know of any particular exercises or anything. Just kind of stop playing for a minute unless you're taking a solo on stage, and just kind of shake it out and just concentrate on it. But someone else may have a better answer than that.
You can try to play as soft as you can, which you're always going to end up playing harder. And I remember reading an interview with Earl Scruggs when people asked him how he got such a great sound in the studio, and he would say, "I would try to play as soft as I can." And that doesn't mean he ended up playing soft. It was a way to keep himself from ending up at the end of his range, you know, because once you're at the end, it's very hard to pull back. You're already, once you get tight and hard up, you know, that way, it's really hard to, don't you guys think?
One thing I think of is the big home run hitter whose record will be eclipsed soon, but he wasn't on steroids, is Hank Aaron. And he's not, if he was sitting here, you wouldn't think, well, geez, you know, he must be a muscle man working on his big fat muscles. He's known as a wrist hitter, which means that he would wait till the last minute and then he would move his wrists really fast, and the bat speed was at maximum speed at the moment he hits the ball. Okay, so what he had to stay relaxed to see whether it was a curveball or a slider or whatever, and then he would make a quick reaction to it. So it's really, you don't have to club the instrument. It's not a question of clubbing the thing. So I try the same way. Try to see if I can get to the point where things are going so well that I can actually relax and have a good time even when I'm playing fast. And it's really, some of it is just practice time doing it. But I feel like if I'm hitting too hard, it's going to mess up the tone. So thinking about that Hank Aaron thing, that if your picks are going fast right at the moment they hit the string, you can get some good tone and some strong tone, but you don't have to be clubbing it. So that's just a little piece of thought to go with that.
Okay, we have a question back here. This is a revolving stage. Like,
can
this.
I just add one little thing? You may have tension in your shoulder and your upper arm, and at one point I was pressing so hard on the armrest I could get a little, you know, like a bruise or something. You got to start lightening up from the shoulder on down and shake it out and then just let it sort of hang and relax. That'll carry through to the hand, I think.
I had a question in the chief seats back there.
So like what you just did, right? You spend more time thinking about hitting certain points, or you spend more time feeling the space that you're in.
The question was, when you're doing something like what you just did, are you spending more time thinking about the notes or just in the space that you're in? Is that
well, thinking about hitting certain points.
Thinking about hitting certain points.
Where you're at.
Or feeling where you're at.
That's a pretty damn good question. Is it okay if I'd like to try to actually answer that? That seems like a really good question. I'd have to deal with that for just a sec, if I may. Is for me, I think, thinking about what Pete was saying there, I think sometimes I struggle with extracting a sound out of the banjo. And one of my teachers recently was telling me that the music is already in there, and you just have to let it go at the right time. And I think that for me, trying to play something where I'm sort of pushing the ideas around, I'm actually not really thinking at all, really, just trying to learn a piece really well, where you can sort of start in any place and can play across all the bar lines. So it might take, I'm a slow learner, it might take 3 or 4 years to learn a piece where I can sort of play across the bar lines and push things around and superimpose things on it and whatnot. But it seems like after a while you get where you can just sort of release from analyzing and just kind of play, and use play in the operative sense where you're actually playing with it, having fun with it. And so that's my answer to that question. How long have you been playing?
That's the question.
Oh, 35 years.
Yeah. Let's let Bela do something here. Thank you.
You played like about 2 minutes in. Could you show us how to do that one? That's my little joke. That's beautiful. You know what I really like about is that it's a banjo and you're playing it. You're getting all these banjo sounds out of it. You know, some people play banjo like it's really supposed to be some other instrument. It's so banjo-y in your hands.
Thanks. Question over there.
I wonder if each of you, if you've got a musician or a composer outside of the bluegrass genre who's been particularly influential.
Question is if there are any musicians outside the bluegrass genre that have influenced. To name one, for instance. One. Okay, let's, Bill, do you have one musical influence outside the bluegrass world?
Well, I don't want to point at one musician, just not to name others, but I listen a lot to bass players and jazz guitar players.
I guess I would say Aaron Copland.
Brian Wilson. It just sounds so good, the stuff he thinks of. It just sounds so good.
Is the Beatles one person?
I really like this minimalist composer, Morton Feldman.
Minimalist?
Yeah.
How would you define minimalist as maybe you pick up on minimalism?
You just have to listen to some of the recordings. I got to look at some of the scores that he has, and he has this bizarre notation system of numbers and symbols and things. I don't think he embraced standard notation until about the last 10 years of his life.
It sounds like tablature.
But how does that affect you, would you say?
I'm just trying to get to the point where he has this thing where on some of his recordings where there may be two bars of nothing, and also they use they play the dynamic range of pianissimo quite a bit, maybe like whole pieces. And I've been trying to get the guts to play, have
just
a piece
play
of,
it, do it.
I can't do it.
Do it right now.
I've been trying to get the guts to play with two bars of rest in the middle of a piece like he does. I find that to be very interesting that he would do that. I tend to fill up the whole space with buona, buona, buona.
Sometimes we like musicians that do the things that we can't do ourselves. You know, we like to hear it. Like it's hard to leave space as a banjo player, but it's great that you appreciate it so much as a banjo player. Like, listen for just 1 second. See what I mean?
How'd you do that?
Any other questions? Another question for Bela, perhaps? Yes, back there. Yes. She was mentioning that she heard an interview with Bela where he was interviewed about his trip to Africa last year and whether any of us had other cultural influences besides American bluegrass. Do you want to talk about the African thing?
I did go to Africa a couple of years ago. It was an incredible trip. And I went to Uganda, Tanzania, Mali, and Gambia. And in West Africa, researched a little bit on, didn't really research, I went to where there were some people that played something a lot like a banjo that seemed to be a forebear of the banjo. And the music they were playing with the right hand looked like clawhammer, exactly. It was a three-string banjo called the akanting, but there were instruments all over West Africa with hide heads and skin bridges and different different amounts of strings and different sizes, and a lot of them have short strings like we have here. So I just think it's obvious that it, you know, the fifth string that supposedly was added by Joel Sweeney in the 1820s was probably a low string, not a high string, in my opinion. But anyway, that's a sidetrack. But anyway, I just found a lot of great musicians to record with over there, field recordings in people's houses, in hotel rooms, wherever, and a lot of instruments that don't, not always banjo-oriented stuff, singers, thumb piano players, drummers, marimba players, and it was a great trip, and I'm still working on it. I have about 4 hours of the movie part of it roughed out, and we have to either make it into half-hour segments for a series or make it into a 90-minute movie and cut a lot away, and then I have about 3 CDs worth of stuff that's all really stuff I would put out. I'm real picky, too, but it was pretty incredible, some of the music that I found over there and the people I got to play with, so. But just be patient. I mean, it's probably going to be... since I don't know anything about the movie business, we're just making the movie, and then we can't really put the record out until we finish the movie, and that's what's taken 2 years, working on the movie. So that's going to continue for probably another 6 months before it's ready to come out, and then hopefully someone will put it out, and then the record will come out, too, right around then. So, but I like all kinds of music. Not, I mean, African music is awesome, and there's tons of great stuff. I knew there was a lot of great stuff over there. I wanted to go check it out, but the world is full of great music, and a lot of it is right here. But there's great music, you know, name the country that you can find it. So I love world music.
I'm from out west now, and I've been living there for about half my life now. And I'm so far from all the other countries, I don't get to go there. And the last time I went to Europe, it seemed like every time I was sitting in a restaurant, they're playing Frank Sinatra. So I didn't get too much influence out of that. But one thing that's really neat if you're out west, and that's also true around here too, there's Indian tribes, they put on powwows. And it's real common in a powwow that there's just, it's a men thing. They sit around, anybody from teenagers to old guys, they're just sitting around a big drum, beating a drum, and they're singing their butts off. And I don't understand the words, but it really reaches me. It's like the best bluegrass singing. It seems like they could all sing up there and do that, and I couldn't tell you how that affects my banjo playing, but I sure like it.
I've had a chance to go to Ireland, and Pete's been over there. Well, not all of us, but three of us have been over there. We're over there too, Bill's been over there. The Johnny Keenan Banjo Festival, and there's a lot of incredible Celtic music you get to
Andy's been there.
Tune into. Were you there too? Okay, Andy's been there too. And it's a wonderful festival, and last time I was there, last September, I got to meet the gentleman that brought the four-string banjo to Irish music, because it wasn't originally a part of Irish music. And just like the five-string banjo wasn't originally the part of bluegrass music. But anyway, so that's been a big influence on me in the last few years. And, not so much what I play every day, but I've worked up some Celtic melodies and things like that. So, Bill?
Well, no, not so much. Thank you very much. I mean, I listen to stuff on the radio and elsewhere, and if I like it, I like it. I don't, the cultural thing, well, or maybe that enters in, but to me, if I like it, it doesn't matter where I came from. I don't try to play flamenco or, you know, or gypsy music or very much classical, or I mean, sure, I love to listen to it, but I don't feel like it's my area. So I enjoy the listening part, and that's where it stops. So yeah, I guess everybody is influenced. I mean, the languages we hear around. I lived in Europe for a while, and so I got my share of all those languages and ethnic and national musics, and it's all kind of neat, but I just don't feel real if I try to play French musette or Italian music. It just doesn't feel like, I feel like I'm pretending, you know, so I don't pretend.
Danny,
where I'm from, they have a really cool accordion music, Norteño and Conjunto music and stuff, and I really like this guy, Narciso Martinez. And a lot of that accordion music lays out really nice with the banjo, sort of diatonic in form, and a lot of AABA structures and things, and polkas and things that work out really nice on the banjo, and I've recorded a few of those pieces and things. And I miss that music when I'm not home, and it's great when I go home to hear it on the AM radio, hear accordion music on the radio, it's really nice.
You're talking Texas now, right?
Yeah. Pete, why don't you play a tune?
Okay.
Well, I'm glad to say that Brian Wilson has recorded with bluegrass banjo once in a while, but he didn't ask me. But I did get my picture taken with him, which was really great. Anyway, this is the latest thing I've come up with lately. It's just pretty dang simple, but it's pretty catchy, so I enjoy doing it. And if you want to just help me out, I'll give it a little. I usually set my rhythm machine at 118. This is about there. And if we got a, you could do a little finger pop or something like that. Suggestions for names, anybody come up?
Plutonium with? Sulfate.
Okay, keep them coming. That's the best one so far.
Plutonium isn't a chemical anymore. I heard. I'm going to do a hold off on the questions and play a little more music. And this is a tune that I wrote a while back and recorded the group called Psychogress. I was just about to tell you, Bill, there are these crazy tuners which allow you to tune perfectly up and down.
The trouble is, you shouldn't tell anyone because, you know, I do a bunch of solo shows and I use these special tuners that this fine gentleman here, the president of Canada, Deacon Benjamin, mixed up the door. Instead of drilling holes in the headstock of your thousands of dollars banjo, you just get it to, it replaces the actual normal peg. And has special tuners. But the thing is, you don't want to tell people that, because if you tell them, then they don't realize. If you don't tell them, they just think you have an incredibly good ear. You get it. It's perfect every time. So, I was just kidding about those special tuners. Yes. This is called Garlics and Sapphire. Tuner? I can't remember. Did I pay you for that tuner?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll
probably
know, right? Was that tune in G?
It's actually in D.
Oh, D.
Mostly. It's a little crazy. Bill Key, folks.
And then I thought, well, maybe I'll just sing one, and then no. something really bad. And then I thought, well, in the spirit of playing banjo stuff that isn't bluegrass, here's a little hymn that I always enjoy playing.
One more time, because we have till 7. Yeah, I've got to rehearse. Yes, we have until 7. I thought maybe... I'm saying we should maybe go down one more time. Play one more tune each. Kind of go down. Why don't we do that? Bill and I, for our portion, we'll do a double banjo thing. And then we'll do it all one more all together. How's that?
We're each going to play for like a minute. We're each going to play like a minute and a half.
Everyone plays for maybe a minute and 45 seconds.
Okay, perfect.
we'll get some time here. Yeah. But yeah, like kind of a shorter thing each, and then Bill and I will do one together, and then we'll all play one last blast.
All right.
So that's all right with you. So, Danny, you want to render one? Favorites with one.
Are we just stop in between, or are we just sort of feather on in?
Whatever you want to do.
Something that fit on the 78 record. Thank you.
16.
Those fiddle tunes you're hearing there are what got me started playing a lot of different kind of things. Bill invented what we today call the melodic style, and I got to play with Bill Monroe in 1963, and got to record a lot of tunes like Devil's Dream and Sailor's Hornpipe and Salt Creek, which have become part of the bluegrass canon. And I think we all up here could just can't begin to say how much we owe to Bill Keith. Danny Barnes, big hand to Danny.
Thank you. Thank you.